The romance of agriculture is hard to resist, and it engages all five senses.
With ag, you smell it, you see it, yeah, you touch it, you know, you step in it. You get to do everything. You hear the rustle at a sale barn in the background or the sound of grain dropping out of an end dump trailer. Yeah, ag is very special in that regard.
Hello, I'm Paul Yeager, and welcome to MTOM, where we meet the show producers and analysts from the public TV show Market to Market in an effort to learn more about them and the stories they tell. Mike Pearson has hosted more than 200 episodes of Market to Market. After succeeding his father, Mark, Mike has gone into the family business, albeit not as planned. We talk opening a history store and debate co-ops and sale barns.
Did you ever think you'd actually get to be on this podcast, or were you beginning to wonder that maybe this was a party you were never going to be invited to?
I'm still not convinced this podcast is ever actually going to air. I think you're just trying to sate me here by bringing me into your little secret room where you go with all the fancy guests
and you don't
let me be on. Mm-hmm. So I guess
we're done,
Michael.
Well, thanks for being here. This is the shortest podcast we've done. We wanted to make sure that everybody was the warm-up act for you.
Oh.
We just can't start. You know, some people do stunt casting. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we bring in Ted and Naomi and John.
Sure.
And all they're all stunt casting to lead up to the main event.
Mm. Your BS is about as thick as your hair,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Yeager.
Mm-hmm.
That is, well, there's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll take it.
I've learned.
I'm on here today.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Yeah.
You know,
M2M
podcast.
You're one of, I think, our three listeners. We're very appreciative, and I don't even know if you listen all the time.
Well, of course I do.
Yes, and you're on the road, because you are on the road quite a bit.
I am. I love driving. I love driving and traveling and seeing the country.
So right now, you are kind of in the middle of the beginning of the big travel season for you.
Yes.
Why?
Yes, because I get to go, thanks to Market to Market, thanks to our very, very loyal listeners, I get asked to go and present at various farm meetings, and
sometimes they call all the time for you.
Sometimes they do, and so this upcoming week. So this is what day are we taping here, Paul?
This is a Friday.
Yeah. Next week, I'm heading. I get to drive. So we've got an ice storm coming this weekend, and I get to drive from Grinnell, Iowa, to Des Moines, pick up a rental car, drive to Minot, North Dakota, and then Menominee, Wisconsin, and then Minneapolis, Minnesota. And then Ames in a week. And so Heidi is going to be doing chores at home while I get to be on the road.
Okay, so you do know Minot is more like, that's about 12 hours from Des Moines.
12 hours in 1 minute.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so you
got to
go.
According to Google.
You got to go through Minneapolis, through Fargo, and you still have to go west and then north once you get to Bismarck.
Yes.
Just in case you hadn't looked.
Oh, I have. I've been to Minot many a time.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city.
It is. And
it actually really is.
I haven't been there now in 2 years. So the last time I was there, this was before oil prices really crashed, or they were on their way down. They were trending lower. But I could not believe the traffic in Minot. I could not believe the traffic on the roads up there, just the two-lane roads in the country. So I'm interested to see how the community has changed now that the fracking boom, the drilling boom at least, is over, slowed down. Yeah.
And maybe we'll come back up. Who knows? But it's 100 miles to the main part of where they're doing all the drilling.
Williston and Dickinson,
People will drive 100 miles. It was hard to get a hotel room even in Minot.
Yes.
During those peak times.
Yeah.
11 and 12 and 13.
And the airport was packed. Yeah. Absolutely packed, because that's where these guys flew out of, because Minot had more flights than Williston did, which I think just connected to Denver in those days.
Yeah.
And now Minot, you know, not San Francisco, but St. Louis and Chicago, Minneapolis. And Minot International Airport. I think it's got three terminals or three gates.
Yeah.
And I love it. You go through TSA, but I'm not flying this time. Get to hit the road.
Were you going to fly, but the long schedule kind of...
Yeah, it was just, it's impossible to count on flights this time of year when you've got a bunch of events, you know, back to back. And I don't really want to miss any of them because it's wheat producers. It's that Minot area producer. So it's wheat, corn, it's soybeans. You know, today it's North Dakota. But then it's dairy producers in Wisconsin and a lot of corn and soybean growers in Minnesota. And then the Beginning Farmers Conference in Iowa. So it's going to be a great mix. I love it. I love that aspect of this job.
Is the Minot, where you're going, is at the hotel up there by the airport on the
yes,
north side? It's the big convention center where everybody does everything.
Yes, and I cannot remember the name of that hotel.
I know
to
exactly,
save my life.
It's really close, so yes. you'll be fine. But you, when you are asked to speak in places, are you asked to speak as an expert, as an MC? Are you there to present or just move things along and let other people have the stage?
All of the above. I do a lot more speaking on the market specifically. So usually, like the talks I'm giving this week, I like to spend about, usually they're 45 minutes to an hour. And I'll do 20 minutes on the markets, just kind of the 10,000 foot. You know, we look at the basic grain stocks. We look at, you know, okay, what are the ranges we're trading in? Some groups, especially the beginning farmers groups, will do kind of a basic primer on, okay, what is an option? You know, what's a put mean? How do you buy a future? What's a margin call? And I've got a couple stories there. I share with them my experiences with margin calls.
Yeah.
And then usually we'll look at 20 minutes at what's going on around the world. You know, as tough as things look today for a lot of the producers in our audience, in your audience here for M2M Podcast, we're really doing something good in agriculture. Low prices, of course, breed demand. And we're seeing that, of course, in soybeans. We're seeing it in corn. We need to see more of it in wheat.
Wheat was good last week.
It was. The dollar falling really helps quite a bit. But, man, we got so much wheat.
But the USDA report out this week that we taped, second lowest hard red wheat acre since 1909.
1.1 million fewer acres in Kansas alone.
It's almost like they were listening to Darren Newsom on Market to Market saying, you know, the best thing we could do is not plant.
Yes, but what's going to happen, this is the concern, those acres, just because they're not going to wheat doesn't mean they're all going to be fallowed. We're probably going to see more milo, and if USDA is to be believed, we're probably going to see 500,000 acres of soybeans on those Kansas acres, which, another incentive to utilize the markets and the prices we have today to lay off some of that risk.
Where did this knowledge come from?
Honestly, the vast bulk of my knowledge has come from sitting in the chair on the show every Friday and talking to our analysts. And they've been really great to me, talking to me before and after the program. If I've got questions, Darren Newsom, of course, I mean, they've all been spectacular. But the charting, the technical aspect of market trading, I didn't have a very good grasp on. I'd always approached it from a fundamental perspective. Being in the banking industry before this, that's how I was trained to look at things. And Darren really spent some time with me working through, okay, what is a wave? What's an Elliott wave? What does that mean? You know, what can we learn from that? You know, what is range-bound trade? Well, you know, all those things. All of our analysts have been just exceptional in teaching me this kind of stuff.
Now, an Elliott wave, is that one of those things where it's brought up, you pull out a piece of paper and you Kirk Ferentz write a note, Elliott wave, and you ask about that later? When something comes up, when one of the guys or gals brings something up on the show and you're like, that's kind of interesting. Is that how you kind of follow up on some questions?
Yeah, a lot of times. And really, a lot of it, I think when our analysts are on the program, they do a really good job of explaining the markets in a way that pretty much everyone can grasp. It's when I'm reading various commentaries or looking at charts in my free time, and I'll read some analysts who'll say, you know, we're coming up on a wave four count here. And Sue Martin, of course, talks about waves quite a bit. She uses the Elliott wave quite a bit. And then it's like, okay, you know what? What does that mean? And then I'll usually reach out to one of our analysts and say, hey, walk me through this. And they do. So I encourage anybody, if you've got questions about what we say on Market to Market, send us the question. We'll be happy to ask it on the air. But also, reach out to our analysts. I mean, they're very, very, very smart in the ways of all things markets.
And there's a chance that somebody else has the same question.
Yes.
You should not feel ashamed.
Exactly.
Well, I don't really know what this is.
Right.
I'm a little... No, because chances are 9 out of 10 people don't know what that is.
Right. And when you start looking at the options as a category that you can trade and lay off risk in, that is a really bizarre tool. It's really hard to understand, and very few people. In fact, I believe the number is Only about 7% of American producers, farmers, ranchers, you name it, only about 7% utilize futures and options to lay off risk. The vast majority of us still buy and sell cash or we forward contract. And nothing wrong with that. But as we look at the future, this industry's getting more complex. Let's learn about the other tools. Even if you decide they're not for you, at least you'll have that knowledge in your back pocket. And we on Market to Market will be here every week to helpfully guide you in the right direction, or at least give you something to think about.
I make you say every week, if you've got a question, hit us up on Facebook or on Twitter.
Right.
And that is what we mean. That's what we're trying to do. Our mission at Iowa Public Television and Market to Market is to educate our viewers.
Right.
And that we take that very seriously. And when we did the Market to Market Classroom Grant, that was what we were trying to do, is answer some of those longstanding questions of, you know, explain this put thing to me.
Yeah.
Explain this call. If I'm upside down on a contango, double, triple, hedge, right, whirly-do, you know, what is that?
Yeah, I'm going to buy some options and run the reverse cattle crush on my, yeah, my, you know, okay, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times, this is a business just like any other that is full of jargon. And I was actually talking to a guy yesterday, full-time grain merchandiser, who lives and breathes the markets, lives and breathes all the trading lingo. And he said, learning to speak grain is like learning to speak a foreign language. And it's true, because
it is.
So much of it is bizarre.
It is. You said a lot of your knowledge has come from the show.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like we shouldn't even have hired you then, if you're saying you didn't have any of this knowledge beforehand.
Well, but, you know, half of being successful is knowing how to bluff. And
but you had a background in banking.
I did. I have a little bit of experience in mortgage lending and then in agricultural lending at a local bank in Grinnell. And you know, grew up on the farm and grew up with Dad, who, of course, talked about the markets constantly, and his was not just commodities. He focused on stocks as well in his day job. And I think just growing up with that in the household, a lot of it wore off. There was kind of, I don't want to say an innate understanding, but just with Dad talking about it constantly, I was able to get a quicker grasp on it when I moved into finance. I understood a little bit of what folks were dealing with, even if the Pearson family farm wasn't always run with absolute net returns first in mind. Dad didn't like paying taxes any more than any other farmer did. And, yeah, we used the farm to write some stuff off, you know. I think
you're
the statute
not
of limitations have passed on all of that. I don't know what the
IRS
says. If
not, both of our fathers did the same thing.
Right.
You know?
Right. And we never would, Paul,
no,
right?
No, absolutely. We're above board.
Above board. We're everything's above board. Legit.
You, though, drove sometimes with your dad. You went on the road.
I did.
And so did you pay attention to the speeches? And what year do you think you were first taken?
Oh, boy. So Dad started hosting Market to Market in 88. Does that
sound
right?
Yeah.
And, oh, I probably started traveling with him not long after. I mean, I remember going as a very little kid to the speeches. And then once I turned, you know, 14 and got my permit, Dad took me along as his driver. So he'd write the speech on the way and eat Casey's pizza, and I would drive. And then that continued all through high school. And how much did I listen is the question. Looking back on it, I wish I would have listened a lot more. I wish I would have paid more attention, but I honestly never saw myself stepping into his shoes in this way. And, yeah, you know, there's a lot of regrets, I think, when you lose somebody like that at a younger age. Then you go, gosh, if only I could have asked X, if only I could have done Y. But I think he gave me a really broad base of knowledge. And got me pointed in the right direction.
He might have done the show another 20 years.
That's exactly right.
And so at that point, you're going, well, gosh, I'm going to be 40. I'm not going to.
Right.
There's no interest in. I'm not going to take over that show at that point. Probably never something that. Did it ever enter your mind?
No, never.
When did it first enter your mind?
When John Nichols called me.
Former senior producer of,
yes,
of Market to Market, good friend of your father's and,
yes,
of the show. Do you know? Did you expect that phone call?
No, not in a million years. I just, like you say, it just never crossed my mind. This was in my world, Dad's show. And when Dad passed away, you know, that would be that. And, yeah, when Nichols called, I was just floored. And offered me the chance to come down and kind of read into the prompter and, you know, try a little bit. And it was nerve-wracking, but it was exciting. And it wouldn't change it for the world. I mean, obviously, I wish Dad were still here.
Sure.
I would change that in a heartbeat, and I'd still be banking and running some cows. But you know, every cloud is a silver lining, and this was the one here, and I'm very grateful for it.
You had done some news reporting or market reporting.
Yes.
You'd had at least some broadcast experience.
Yep. Spent about 2.5 years on air with WOI Radio out of Ames back before they closed their market news branch in 2007, 8?
Somewhere in there.
Right
yeah.
around in there.
Yeah.
And I was there in 2005 and 6, 7, 2004 through 7-ish. Somewhere in there. Those years kind of blur together. I was a very poor college student, and I don't mean poor financially. I mean poor as in grades. I was learning other things when I was in college. And at
lots of colleges.
Yes.
You were getting a taste of many different schools. You kind of were doing, most people visit a lot of campuses before they enroll.
Exactly.
You just took your own path and visited a lot.
I did.
After.
I believe in a well-rounded education, and I don't think you can truly get a well-rounded education unless you attend multiple institutions. And, yeah, so that certainly helped.
Now, the line, you know, you go back to the speeches. Your dad used to have a line where he said,
"My son went off to college. He went over to the University of Iowa. He's studying history, so he's going to open a history store." And
how many times had you...
Oh, jeez. I started hearing that line probably in 2002 when I was in high school and was thinking, okay, I need to go to college. What am I going to study? Well, history, I understand. Let's study history. And that was when that line started. And so 10 years, I suppose, up until his passing in 2012, he was really pushing for me to open that history store. But, you know, it gets to a point when you're pursuing a higher education that you just need the piece of paper. And for me, history, I think, is fascinating. There's a lot we can learn today from our understanding of the past. But also, history is a discipline where you learn to argue, you learn to stand behind points you're making. And then if you learn that, you can kind of BS in anything. And that's a very helpful skill. Yeah.
So was history the original major intent?
So
when did you get into finance?
I was history... First, at the University of Iowa, where I lasted a semester and didn't really attend many classes. And after that first semester, Mom and Dad said, you know, I think you've used up our largesse here at college. So now you're on your own. And think about that. So I did think about it. And they let me move back in with them. And I went to DMAC. So I graduated with an Associate of Liberal Arts degree from our local community college here in Des Moines. Then I went to Iowa State, and I was an econ major because there is something fascinating about the way the markets move. They say that, let me see if I can do this right. Economics is applied psychology. You're applying the way the human brain works to how they handle money. And psychology is just applied biology. Brain chemicals come together. And so really, econ is kind of the expression of all of that. And economics was fascinating to me. But I got to Econ 416 at Iowa State University, and I cannot for the life of me remember the professor's name, but great guy. He wrote an equation on the board that when I transcribed it in my notebook, it took up basically a line and a half, college ruled paper. And at that point, I kind of said, whew, I don't know if I'm ready to study quite this hard to get the degree. And so then left Iowa State University, moved out to Scottsdale, Arizona, attended bar for a little while, got a firsthand view of economics in practice, trying to make a living. And then the financial crisis hit in 2007, late 2007, 2008, and called Mom and Dad, said, hey, things aren't real good. Can I move back in again? And my parents are saints. They said yes, so they let me move back home. I went to Simpson College, not too far from the family farm. And that was when I was like, you know what? Time to put my nose to the grindstone and get out. History, I can do. Let's just do it. And I did it and, you know, graduated from Simpson with like a 3.8 GPA at, how old was I? 24. So
it's okay. Hey, you got it.
I did.
You
I
did
got
it?
The paper.
But the skills that you pick up on a book are not ones, you're more of a learner of observation, you've already said,
mm-hmm.
you know, and asking questions and things like that. Do you think some of your broadcasting acumen came from observing and watching, Mark?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of those things where I wish I'd paid more attention, because he had a way, and I'm sure, Paul, you know this, and so many folks do that have television and radio experience. They have a way to get to the bottom of an issue in a straightforward way without appearing rude. And that is truly a gift. When people watch good interviewers, you don't realize you're watching a good interviewer. You know, it's just a conversation, and at the end of it, you go, holy cow, I learned something. That's the mark of a good interviewer. And I don't have that skill yet. That's one of those things that I think Dad had just in his blood. He was just a natural talker, a natural curious person. And for me, it's something I'm learning every single week when I come in and work with the producers of Market to Market. Okay, how can we make this a little smoother? How can my questions flow a little better? How can we have a conversation that's enlightening for the audience? And I look forward to continue learning it. But yeah, I wish I'd paid more attention when Dad was doing his thing, because he did have a really good way of talking to folks.
Well, viewers want you to pin down an analyst, and so do we, as producers of the show, want you to pin down, Don Rose, I need a range here.
Yeah.
You know, give me 420 to 450. Are you in that ballpark?
Yep.
Well, you know, I don't know, Mike. You know, that is the hard part of the hammer you have to lay down.
It is, and it's hard because, well, nobody knows where these markets are going. If we had any analyst who could say with any certainty, sell your beans at 1050, then, right.
Mark Gold said it about 3 weeks ago.
I wouldn't be here if I could do that. I'd be on the beach somewhere, which is exactly right. The fact is, all we can put forward each week is our best guess. And as producers, as followers of this program, you have to put together our great stable of analysts' thoughts. And you'll agree with some, disagree with others. Put that on the ground with what you're hearing at the coffee shop, what you're reading independently, and what your gut feel is. And that's how you've got to make a living. Either that or, as so many of our analysts have said, write down a marketing plan and plan your sales out so you're not making that decision constantly. And I think that's very important.
Yeah, that's something that John Roach talks about a lot. You know, where are you at in your calendar of sales? Mm-hmm. If you need to cover your cash flow needs right now, that's kind of saying, okay, you maybe didn't plan as much as we would like you to. But, I mean, that's what they're trying to do, is to assist. I mean, they're looking for clients as well.
Yes.
I mean, that's part of the dance that we do.
And at the end of the day, the only decision you can make, either as an analyst, as a broker, or more importantly, as a farmer, is do I sell today? We don't know what the future holds. We know what was in the past, but you've got to go, all right, D's corn at three, or we break over $4 this week? I haven't looked today. We probably did.
We might have.
I haven't even checked the markets at all today. Today, of course, is Friday, and so I will check the markets before we tape the program. But I know after yesterday's report, we were moving higher. D's corn was looking at $4. And the question is, all right, is $4 a level I can stomach minus basis in my local environment? And if it is, all right, let's put some puts on. Let's sell some futures, forward contract something. And is corn going to 450? Who knows?
It could.
Could
also go to 350.
It certainly could. And we get a drought, it could be $6. Do you want to bank on that? You know, I'm still sitting on some calves from last year that, by golly, I really wanted to get back over 150, and that's just not going to happen. So, you know, you gotta take your pick with what the market offers you today, and sometimes you'll be wrong. You know, I've been wrong several times trading, and sometimes you'll be right, and that's really fun. But you were right, probably by luck.
Your dad had animals that he sold and a farm operation that he had.
Yes.
And you, the same thing, but you have the animals, not crops, right?
Right. So far, we just have livestock.
So far. Do you think that makes the two of you a much more realistic person sitting in the chair asking on a producer's behalf, because you know, if we don't get a little uptick here, my shorts are going to get pretty tight.
Yeah. You know, I like to hope so. I think it's more fun for me to have some skin in the game as well. And agriculture is just a passion of mine. That's why I would love to acquire some crop ground. But being a young producer with no equity, you know, every now and again in a downturn like this, some people suffer and some people benefit. And I would be a benefactor if prices fall and cash rents come down. But as they stand today, I hope it does make us a little better seeing the producer's perspective, not just a lot of numbers on a sheet of paper or on a computer screen. But the other risk is I become biased. And I'm small enough, I don't think it matters. But if I were running a 50,000-head feed yard, all right, I'm going to be pretty much in favor of lower corn prices. And I think that would come through in questioning. So it's, while it's true, I have a firsthand
vested
grasp.
Interest. Yeah,
a vested, on a small way, in feeder cattle anyway. It's not enough that it's, I worry about a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to make anything by saying something that'll drive the cost of feeder cattle any higher, you know.
You'd like to think you have power, but you just don't have that much.
Well, at the end of the day, I just wouldn't capture any premium because, you know, I've got 17 calves to sell this spring. You know, this sale barn's going to break them up into lots of two. I'm not going to catch any premium on them anyway. So, yeah, I wouldn't stand to benefit by saying, oh boy, everybody's, you know, feeder calves are dying off. They're running out of feeder calves and bid the price up. Well, I'm not really going to stand to benefit.
What's more fun to go to, a sale barn or a co-op?
Again, personal preference, sale barn, for several reasons. One, there's something great about an old sale barn that smells of sawdust and manure. And you can still, in a lot of these old barns, smell the cigarette smoke from the buyers that just sat in those chairs and smoked and smoked and smoked. And that's just a great odor. Plus, you've got the action of actually setting a price. You know, it comes back to that economics being psychology in applied psychology. Here we've got sellers usually sitting there right next to buyers, and the buyers are fighting, or sometimes not fighting, over who's going to take those animals home, and you're establishing a price right there. Could you've got more? Nope. That's what the market would bear on that day, which I think is fascinating. Also, most sale barns have a great lunch counter, and you can always get incredible burgers and great fries and good coffee at a sale barn, sometimes at an elevator. But always at a...
You're probably only going to get the co-op
coffee. Yep.
You know?
Coffee. Sometimes, or, you know, a cookie.
Yeah.
Donuts.
Chances are
day
it's
old,
from...
but they're okay.
Yeah, because why would we spend premium on donuts when day old is going to be just fine?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care about you...
You'll eat them anyway.
Whoever you were, I could insult a whole bunch of people. What I always remember of the co-op is that we had in Jessup, we had a bottle machine that was a tabletop. You opened up the top and you put the dime in and you slid the bottle across and out.
Nice.
Do you remember any of those machines?
I remember seeing them, but I don't think we had one at the Winterset elevator. I just remember going in there, and they had the old counter, and same story, still smelled like grain dust and smoke.
Yes, and chemical.
And you'd stand in there, and everybody'd go over to their DTN machine back when it was a standalone unit sitting on the end of the counter, and you'd poke around, and somebody would swear about the prices because they're never high enough. And, oh, God darn it. You know, and then you sip some coffee and BS for a little while, and always a little bit of a haze in the air from that dust floating around. There's so much in agriculture that I think when people talk about this industry and they talk about it with a passion, it's because it's one of the few industries that I can think of, and I could be wrong, that really touches all five senses. Mm-hmm. When you're involved in agriculture, it's different than insurance. And I know a lot of passionate insurance salespeople. I do. My wife's uncle is committed to his industry, but I don't think his passion rises to the level in agriculture because – with ag, you smell it, you see it, you touch it, you know, you step in it. You get to do everything. You hear the rustle at a sale barn in the background or the sound of grain dropping out of an end dump trailer. And those are things that maybe welding, I guess, you'd touch all five senses. But yeah, ag is very special in that regard.
And there's a romance to it.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of nostalgia. That's why that one Super Bowl commercial a couple of years ago, that was a Paul Harvey speech from 1975 or something like that. You know, it's a 40-year-old speech. It's like, you people have never heard that one before?
Yeah. And, you know, it's romantic. There's also, and I think Americans as a class, just like the rugged individualist and the farmer, is still one of those people who has to do everything. You don't have to anymore, but most still do. You know, they're up early, they're planting, they're tending to livestock, they're marketing it, they're trying to make a living. And I think just as a rule, even those that have never been to a farm or have never, you know, were never raised on a farm, they respect that aspect of our industry. And it's truly respectable. That is something impressive that we do in this business.
Are the farmers different, do you think, that you will meet in Minot versus Menominee versus Salina, Kansas? Is there a difference between those producers that come and hear a speech?
No. That's one of the cool things about this business. There are subtle differences. Accents are different. I was in Tennessee on Monday, and, you know, God bless the folks in Tennessee. I sat and listened to all the programs before me, and I could understand maybe half of it, you know, and that's something that's different. It's a different way of doing business. But as a rule, you're going to see flannel shirts, ball caps. If it's a livestock deal, you'll see a lot of vests. If it's not a livestock deal, you'll see some pullovers. Friendly folks, by and large, curious. And granted, this is a group that's coming to learn about the market, so there's a little bit of self-selection. But they're curious, they're engaged, and that's true whether I'm in Washington State, Minot, North Dakota, Grinnell, Iowa, or Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I mean, it's truly something, I don't know, special about agriculture. Yeah. You do notice a difference, though, between predominantly livestock producers and versus predominantly row crop producers. The row crop producers tend to be a little cleaner at these winter speaking events. Livestock producers have always just come from chores. And so a lot of times you'll have, you know.
There'll be a different odor in the air.
Yes. There'll be proof that they have just mm-hmm. come from chores. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really the only distinction.
Yeah. But that's one of those smells that you're like, oh, that I'm home.
I love that smell.
Yeah.
You know, you get one of those humid days in June after a little bit of a rainfall, and there's that mix of feed, I feed silage, so you get that silage smell mixed with that earthy, manure-y smell, and it's like, time to grill a steak. You know, it's just something about that smell just gets me primed to be outside and grilling.
And it's back to the five senses.
It is,
for
yes.
you.
Yes.
All right, when you come back, we'll do this again sometime.
Yeah.
If this ever sees the light of day.
Right.
Oh, did I delete that, Mike? Gosh, what a shame.
We'll get you back on in a year.
Yeah, well, okay. 6 months or whatever. Yeah. You know, we'll talk about, I want to hear some more travel tales.
Sure.
Some of those good ones. Those always make for good material. So, Mike, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate finally being on M2M.
We want to hear from you. Email the program, markettomarket@iptv.org, for your thoughts on this podcast and our other work on the show. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.